If you want to get people involved in your organization's conversations, then the first step is to get them to notice you, of course, and to think you're someone other people are talking about. It's not always easy, of course. So how do you stand out from the noise when the noise is just getting louder and louder? Welcome to the Public Relations Podcast. We'll be reviewing a selection of PR news stories and campaigns over the next few minutes to see how others are doing it, to see if we can pick up some ideas too. We've got listener questions, stories about controlling narrative with timing. We're talking about Sam Altman from OpenAI and lots of other things, such as like TikTok. Is it going to become the new Google when it comes to search engines? We shall see. As usual, I'm joined by a wonderful guest to review these stories, someone who's working on the front line of PR today, who will also be sharing their insights from their own campaigns too. So welcome once again to the Public Relations Podcast.
The Public Relations Podcast with Richard Ninson.
Well, I hope you're having a very good week. Such a great chat with Kayleigh Hamilton last week. I hope you enjoyed that. I was chatting to her from that hotel room in Germany, so apologies a little bit about the sound and the cutout on that recording. I always love chatting to Kayleigh and really discussing about sort of personalities and thought leads and stuff like that, because Kayleigh is, I'm sure you remember if you saw the episode, is an Emmy Award-winning reporter who has discussed life, the world, the entertainment business and everything with so many celebrities over the years, and so really brings some value in how she approaches the PR. We were talking about Neil deGrasse Tyson, the sort of pop scientist, and how his strategy was so effective in building him up from being just a sort of scientist figure into the personality he is now. And I had a quick look at Google just before I started doing this show today. And over the past 4 days, I think it was, that he has been mentioned 10 times in news articles. Just imagine trying to get that kind of coverage and being so successful there. There was an article I was seeing about black scientists, an astrology article, which was an interesting one, Christmas gifts, to his thoughts on the Barbie movie as well. So really interesting discussion. If you didn't hear the episode with Kayleigh last week, then check that one out once we finish today's show. What else? I was in London after Germany last week, and that meant I got to pop into the UK Parliament as well and meet up with some of my former colleagues from the world of politics. One observation that I was reminded of when I was there is, and I think people often forget this if you are trying to get politicians on board with your campaigns, it's okay, politicians obviously get a bad rep, but they are basically people trying to run a country, which is a challenge. And I was sat in this members' cafe in the House of Lords, and we were talking about policy and AI and all this kind of thing. And you often forget that these people actually can't know about everything. And if you can approach them, almost like a journalist, if you can approach them and give them actual, real, useful information in an unbiased way, or as much unbiased as possible, they do actually value that information. So there I was chatting away some of my experiences of recent years since I've been working in that field, and helping them with some of the ideas and things that I am seeing. So don't be afraid to approach politicians if you're going to approach it in that sort of objective way and in that useful way. But let's move on to this week. And I am super excited to be discussing all these stories, so much coming up this week, with Amanda Prossia. And if you don't know Amanda, then she is from Lightspeed PR. Hello to Amanda. How are you? What were you just saying to me? You had how many people at Thanksgiving dinner this year?
We had 32 people.
How do you have 32 people at a
very large family, and you cannot invite anyone, so you just keep adding chairs to the big table and adding a little more meat from the turkey. Keep going.
No, I mean, not putting you on the spot here, but is there an element of the PR trying to get everyone to work together happily? Because we know what families are like when they get together.
There is a bit. I fortunately was not the hostess, but my cousin who did the gathering, she's very good at knowing who to put next to whom and which topics not to bring up. So I made a blur on the bloodline. Could be.
tell everyone a bit about what you do and where you work at Lightspeed PR for people that don't know you yet.
Sure, yes. I've spent 30 years in public relations, the last 10 of which running my own agency, which I co-founded. We are a tech-focused agency, fully remote, I'm delighted to say. Called Lightspeed PR, and we have clients just from the whole gamut of tech, AR and VR, robotics, health tech, consumer electronics, you know, open AI, SaaS, whatever you might want to talk about. We generally have somebody like that on our client list, so it's very exciting, never a dull moment.
It's one of the things we were talking about as well before was that, because obviously I work in the world of tech as well at the moment, and it's one of the biggest challenges is getting these brilliant minds that know technology so well and translating that into language that we understand for starters, let alone other people, isn't that? So always a challenge every day.
Yeah, every day. Right there on the front page of my website, we call ourselves tech translators because we realize that's 90% of what we're doing. It's taking these incredible ideas from these brilliant minds and putting it into language that other people will understand, reporters will understand, that their potential customers and partners will all... It's all about bridging that gap in the language.
It's a problem, though, I think, isn't it? Because when you're a technologist and you're working on somebody that you're really excited about, and you need to understand the process to be able to code it or build it or whatever. But that's the thing that excites you. So when someone comes along and says, oh, you could do this bit of code differently, you're going to be thrilled by it. It's going to grab your attention. That's what you want to hear. But the people that you're selling it to, that product, are going to have a very different view of the world. And that's the problem, isn't it? You've got two completely different mindsets over exactly the same thing.
Yes, that's, in my opinion, that's the entire reason we PR professionals exist. Our entire job is to represent the people you're talking to and to help our clients or whomever we're working with to say, yes, coming from you, it sounds like a wonderful idea, but I'm telling you how this is going to land on the ears of all the people we're sharing this with. And we have to make it work for them. I think if we're like producers in that way, representing the people and the target audiences who have to receive the message.
Have you ever been sat there completely? I've done it, so I'm sure you will, where you've just been completely flummoxed. And I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, too many times to count. And very often I'll just say to them, listen, I'm really trying to understand you and I'm not. And whoever I'm talking to about this is not going to try very hard. So let's work on this. Talk to me like I'm a five-year-old. Make sure I understand it. And then I can make it something that can be shared out to everybody else.
It
happens probably every day.
I am sure we're going to touch back on this as we go through the show. Let's have a look at a couple of stories that have been around recently. It was one I saw on YouTube the other day, in fact, in 2021. Ant Middleton, he was a former Special Forces soldier, was removed from his role as the chief instructor on the UK's Channel 4 TV show SAS Who Dares Wins. Now, in this recent interview that I saw, he said he got a call from his agent to tell him he was off the show about 45 minutes before it emerged in the press. In that call, he was told his life was about to change. Now, the media stories accused him of bad behavior and referred to comments which he had made on social media, which had upset some. Now, he claims the production company had pre-briefed the media in order to gain narrative control before he had a chance to counter those claims, and says he feels the stories had already been written when he found out. Whatever the truth behind Middleton's departure, whether these claims are true or not, is irrelevant here. What we're interested in is the PR side of it. But it highlights the use of timing to control a narrative in high-profile cases like this. So what can we learn from this? I mean, my first thought straight away is that clearly he's a popular figure. If he had got the word out to the press first, they could well have taken his line. The production company were very keen to gain the control of the narrative, assuming that these are the events, but let's assume they are so that we can look at it from a PR perspective. So it's that timing, it's getting in there fast, controlling that before he had a chance to respond. What's your take on it?
I suspect, yes, that whatever the production company's theory or strategy was, they achieved that because especially when you're talking about someone in the public eye, the media, let's face it, they like to go for the story that's going to be the most interesting and grab headlines. And if they knew they could get out with something that was going to intrigue the public, something about bad behavior of someone well-known, they're going to run with that. And if you don't have the opportunity to present your side of the story before those articles are written or those opinions are formed, you really do have to do a lot of work to gain that ground again. So, I agree. The timing was advantageous for the production company.
It's like one of the challenges with politics, which is what I used to work in, is that if newspapers or journalists have got a story, they will often come to you with a comment, but you don't know necessarily how much they know. So the temptation, you know, if you look at this, you would say to yourself, okay, well, if I get my statement out first, if I say this is what happened to try and preempt the press, but you don't want to say too much because they may not have known that. It's a difficult challenge, that one.
It is, yes. And I actually started my career working in politics, too. And I agree with you. It's a very hard line you have to walk because you want to tell the truth and you want to be forthcoming, but you also don't want to present yourself in the wrong light when you don't know what the full story is. It's it's a lot of secondary phone calls to people who might know, or getting your ear on the ground of what's going on out there, what's being said, and trying to get out ahead of something that might already have left without you. So it's extremely difficult.
I think also this story as well shows the importance of having pre-existing relationships with journalists too. You know, the production company, again, we're assuming that this is what Ann Middleton said is correct, but from a PR sort of hypothesis point of view, it's that essential to have those contacts already, because if you were trying to get a story out and you were trying to build the contacts at the same time, you're going to lose that timing control and that ability to preempt it all.
Yes, absolutely. Having a good reputation with the media and having reporters who know they can call you and get a truthful and accurate answer, that goes a long way in those difficult situations.
Yeah, it's that truthful and accurate answer. I love that. Let's move on to a story you spotted. Well, I mean, I think we all spotted this one, but I love the fact you brought it up. Let's talk OpenAI and Sam Altman. What was it particularly about that caught your eye?
Well, I've read so many articles about it, conjecture of what happened and what's going on and who chose this and why, you know, and ethics versus money and all of the background, financial and business and internal politics of it. But what struck me the most was how Sam Altman himself handled the situation, because even when he was ousted, he very cleverly and wisely used his own social media platforms, which we never can discount when you're doing PR. Talking directly to the public, if you have a good platform and you're well known, using social media channels is extremely valuable. And I feel he did it very well. He remained relatable and human. He congratulated his team. He thought about the mission of his company. He put it first in his mind. And he came across as humble and even with some humor. And I think he handled the situation perfectly, and might even have led to what ended up being his reinstatement because of the way he used that platform.
Do you think he got away with being calm because he was so high profile? Because we know the media wants exciting stories, and if you are just calm and placid, they can often be bored. But Sam Altman, you can't ignore him. I mean, he was the center of the story. You have to get a comment from him. You want to run something. So almost anything he said was going to get run. He could control the narrative again.
Exactly. Plus, he was speaking directly to his own audience. People could go on X, or what was Twitter, and see his comments for himself and say, okay, there's so much I don't understand about this story, but here's this real human saying things that make sense to me, and so I'm going to pay attention to him.
It's interesting how Will Smith, after the infamous slap at the Oscars, he really went on his social media then. And I remember following it initially after that. And it was almost like nothing had happened. And he was very keen to get away from the entertainment press. And there was all kinds of discussions. I think it was Variety at the time was saying that he's doing a lot of damage by talking on social media and not in the press. And it's like, well, actually, I think he's actually doing the right thing, because he was talking directly to the people that liked him rather than putting more speculation in the entertainment press.
Yes, whether or not it was successful, it certainly was worth trying on his part. I would have said, if he were listening to me, I said, sure, try to change the conversation. Bring it back to who you are as a person and the reason people follow you on social media in the first place, which is because they like you and they want to listen to you. So
that's an interesting point there. You say, not sure whether it is successful. And I mean, yes, he definitely hasn't rehabilitated himself. But do you think he should have done a bit of press, maybe? I mean, we are hypothesizing a bit here, but what does your kind of gut tell you?
If I had been his publicist, I think I probably would have advised him to just talk to one or two trusted reporters, people he had a relationship with, people he knew weren't going to smear him or inflate the conversation, but give him an opportunity to explain his side of the story. If it was done, it was a hard thing to explain, given that it all played out live in front of millions of viewers. But there's always something to be gained by going on the record and telling people why you did what you did, even if there isn't a good reason, just to explain what happened.
Because in the end, he went and did that video that he released on his own Instagram, where he kind of explained his position. So, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It's always different situations require different things. Exactly. Let's move on to the next one, TikTok. And it's SEO rise, at least according to an SEO marketing agency, rise at 7 in a recent article from them. The firm said 40% of 18 to 24-year-olds prefer TikTok to Google for finding places to go or eat out. In fashion and beauty, TikTok drives an 80% conversion rate, they claim as well. According to the agency, the video platform is now a primary source of information for many Gen Zers looking for answers to questions, and therefore is presumably crucial for organizations wanting to reach out to them from an SEO point of view. What can we learn from this? I mean, my immediate thing on this is that when you put a video on TikTok, no longer just put a few quick words on it. Really think about the words you're using for the title and optimize it in the same way you would do for Google, isn't that?
Yes, very much. I personally, the way I'm reading this is a real insight into this demographic, particularly Gen Z, younger, that they want to get their information in a different way. TikTok presents a few real advantages. It gives them a sense of community. It algorithms are specifically developed so that you're getting exactly the kind of information you want. And it probably feels more personal and more relevant to them. So as we're all deciding our next campaigns that are targeted at this younger group, there's some real clues there that we might use as we're getting to learn a little bit more about them.
It's interesting also that maybe, and I was just thinking about this, maybe also they view TikTok as being a more authentic search engine for them or delivering better results. It's a bit like that old sort of, you know, adults are on Facebook, kids are on TikTok kind of thing. You know, it's the platform that is going to deliver the information I want skewed to how I view the world that we're all looking for, aren't we?
Yes, exactly. And I can understand that appeal for them. Google can be a little cumbersome. You want to get a recommendation and you get thousands, you know, and TikTok can cut through the clutter a little bit more easily for you. It's a little more entertaining. So I think it's a very good window into this rising demographic.
Yeah, got to watch what they're doing. You are listening to the Public Relations Podcast on all good podcast platforms, and also now as a bit of an experiment on YouTube as well, with myself today, Richard Midson, and the wonderful Amanda Prossia, the COO and founder at Lightspeed PR. Still to come, we're going to be having a look at a bunch of other questions from some of you listeners. But first of all, let's talk about a campaign that Amanda is involved in. And it's quite a techie question, this one, but something that the public can very much use. Just tell us a bit about it and how you went about organizing it as well.
Sure. I'd love to highlight something my team worked on recently. It was for a client that's in the carbon space, where they're trying to help built environments, that is construction and building and existing buildings or new buildings, to be more carbon neutral. And there's a lot of ways you can do that and a lot of reasons you should do it. But like most of my tech clients, it's not readily understandable to ordinary people. It's not something you're thinking about every day, or how carbon aware is the building I'm living in. So we had to take a big step back with them and help them tell their story and primarily explain why, what problem we were solving and why people should care about it.
And what was the main hook you went for there? Because one of the problems with the environment is that we all know we've got to do it, but there's a lot of stuff out there about it, isn't it? So how did you find the hook, and how did you get that to stand out?
What was interesting is it was the platform they were launching, and we were with them pre-launch. So we knew we had an opportunity to develop the messaging then. We had some very passionate leaders we were working with. They cared very deeply about how we were talking about what they were doing. And so we took that opportunity to develop the right way to talk about it in what we were kind of looking at as a sort of teaser campaign. So we developed an animated video. It was an explainer video. They made it very quick and easy to understand what they were hoping to accomplish and why. And then we put that out with media that we knew would care about it. So we talked to, you know, the environment reporters and the construction reporters and people who we knew would take the time to learn a little bit about it. And then with the advantage of having laid the groundwork, a bit of an education at the start, then when they did do the launch of the platform, which makes it very easy for anybody to go in and find out just where their building scores in terms of the environment, then it was much easier to get to the advantages of the platform and why it should be used and who should use it, and hopefully create a demand for something like that so that people can take more of a role in their own carbon footprint and how they're impacting the world around them and, you know, maybe even save the planet.
How'd you get that across? I mean, there's a problem with the environmental message. Like I say, we all know we've got to do it, but there's a lot of different options out there. So how did you focus in on how to make it stand out, and rather than just being, you know, another great idea? What was that sort of aspect?
There were a few pieces. So we started with some statistics, which I hadn't even been aware of, which is construction is some of the biggest offenders of bad carbon acting, of bad environmental impact. It's really a big problem to tackle. So understanding that there are better and worse ways to do it was something we weren't thinking that anybody was aware of. We certainly weren't aware of it.
Yeah.
So sharing that and saying, look, there are ways that we can do this better. And there's information that can be accessed so that when you're making a decision about how something you're building or something you're going to live in is going to impact the environment, maybe think about it from this perspective. Think about it in terms of the enormity of what's happening. So we started with that. We started with what we saw as
figures, which are always good. If you've got something which has grabbed the attention, it's a nice and easy hook. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, what we saw is the urgency of the story. Just this is something people need to be aware of. And then we went into the ease of it, the ease of use of this platform that was being built, and getting a hold of the information that you needed to make these decisions or to help someone else make a better decision. It just seemed too quick and easy to be ignored. So then we were able to leverage that. And then once we were able to tell the story with quickness and clarity, it became something that the media really responded to. And I'm thrilled to say that we had great success. We had a beautiful feature in Fast Company. We got some top tier publications, a lot of regional coverage for the founders who are on the West Coast of the United States. And just we got a lot of people to set up and say, oh, yeah, this really is something that people should use and pay attention to.
I like it also because it's a really simple story to explain, isn't it? Or more correctly, the hook you came up with, the story you came up with from all the complexities of it is what was simple.
Yes, it took us a while to get to that because as many of them.
Can you remember how it first started or the first conversation or what the technical side was?
Oh, goodness. Yes, the two founders both had a background in construction, families that were in the construction business. And they said, we want to do better. And we want to put this incredible information that we have out there. And we want everybody to know about it. And we said, okay, why?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds really exciting, but why? What? Yeah.
Why would people care? Yeah. We said, well, you know, we want to create a movement. We want people to really believe in why this is important. And we said, absolutely.
Okay.
Noble. We agree with you. But why? You know, it often comes back to that with our technology clients, which is, yes, we think what you're saying is very cool and very noteworthy, but we're not sure the public is going to really care. You have to rise above all the noise. So once we were able to dig down and go into all the details of why this really was important and how they really did have something that was going to help, and in a way that didn't exist before, we said, okay, you do have something here.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great story. And how have you, what's the sort of next steps for the campaign now? So you've obviously kicked it off pretty well, but where do you see it going next, or how will you approach the strategy on that?
Actually, the company is now taking a little bit of a step back to raise some funding. And, you know, very often companies come to us and we say, okay, we need awareness out there so that we can create news and then get investors and partners and all the pieces of the puzzle that we need. So we're thrilled that we're able to get them to that place. So now they're regrouping, they're taking all this great awareness. They're finding new opportunities for it, new partners who can help them really bring it forward into all of these built environments that are around the world. And then we hope to restart with them once they're ready for the next phase.
I imagine there's plenty of hooks on there because construction, so many different types of it, isn't it? As you said, it's a global thing as well.
Yeah. Even what concrete you choose, the type of glass for the windows, the way you set up the building, and then it's all of the various things that power the building. There are decisions that can be made at the very outset that have an enormous impact.
That's really, so there's angles, isn't there, with, I mean, the furniture press, the window press, not I know what anything about the construction industry, but I just mean there's loads of potential niches within that general area that can all be done bit by bit.
Yes. And all of that comes together to create one carbon score for the building. And it is possible to have a score of zero where you're not really impacting the environment around you. And that's the goal.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. Right, let's move on to what have we got next? We're just going to have a look at another campaign, which I spotted out there at the moment. One way to reach people, as I said at the beginning of the show, and get a conversation going is to ride on an online trend. But often these trends don't really fit the message that you're trying to get across. So what if you could create the trend yourself? It's kind of the ultimate goal, isn't it? This is the challenge that the social media agency that I mentioned earlier, Rise at Seven, tackled with their campaign for the clothing client Pretty Little Things. To begin the process, they first search for an item that was already achieving a fair amount of search engine traffic for their client. This allowed them to start from a higher baseline because algorithms, of course, across the board are going to be more aware of it already. So you're not just trying to start from scratch, you're actually building on something. They then brought on board what they say were 50 influencers, some of them paid, some gifted, and asked them to promote the item simultaneously at exactly the same moment. This coordination, they said, was crucial, as the firm said they needed to show to the algorithms that everyone was suddenly talking about it. As TikTok, where they were focused, and other platforms are obviously keen to embrace trends to capture interest in what people are talking about at that moment, this helped them to gain more visibility. The result of all this was that people then started searching for the brand online, then signaling to generally to search engines that the topic was on the rise and boosting the firm's and the product's online authority. And this was all backed up by press coverage as well. Now, this technique clearly shows how conversations can be initiated, even amongst all the digital noise out there today. Never going to be easy, but the campaign in this particular case won numerous awards and saw a big increase in traffic for the firm. And the firm says it costs them no more than £5,000, which is about 6,200-ish US dollars. I don't know what the breakdown of that was, but it still sounds like a pretty reasonable amount for a firm like this and for the campaign. I mean, the first thing for me here is that I saw something a while back, and I don't know how. I think it's too hard to say you just need a certain number of mentions to trend because there's far too many other factors. But it was a figure that I saw that said something like you need 120,000 mentions on Twitter to start trending in the eyes of Twitter. As I said, very, very general figure. But to me, this campaign was all about doing it simultaneously, about getting that to stand out at that moment. That's my main takeaway. What's yours?
Yes, that's certainly one of them. I'm actually very impressed that they were able to bring on board 50 influencers for little money. I suppose it's
very, very cheap, actually. I'm a little bit, but okay.
Whenever we do influencer marketing within my team, it's generally quite expensive. And I suppose, of course, it depends on who you're working with and what they're promoting. But if you're able to use 50, I suppose, nano-influencers or micro-influencers in order to hit a certain timing, that's an interesting way to do it. And I do know that there are algorithms out there that will reward you in the moment. If they're trending toward what's happening at that particular moment, then you can benefit. And in fact, I recently wrote a book and promoted it on Amazon. And because I had so many sales on the first day I launched it, I was able to achieve the bestseller position with my book.
Tell us more how you did it then, because it ties beautifully into this. And of course, tell us the name of the book. Would you better tell us that?
It's PR Confidential. It's just kind of a primer on all things PR. It's pulled from the many, many, many questions that I've heard over 30 years, particularly in tech PR, where people just really don't understand what we do. And it was an attempt to mystify the public relations industry. And it's written in letters, like advice column format, with people asking me these questions anonymized and me answering them. But, you know, it's fun and quick. And I just send you a lot of friends and family and my client base and friends of the agency. Hey, you know, this is the day it goes on sale. And unbeknownst to the fact that if you get a certain number of sales in a given 24 hours, Amazon will register you as a bestseller because you've outsold the next book in your category. Now, the next day, all those numbers reset to zero and it's everybody's back in the game again. But that's not the way it works in traditional publishing, of course. So you wouldn't think that would be how it worked, but I was able to benefit from it. So I won't complain. But there is, if you learn more and more about these algorithms and how they reward various engagements, then I suppose there are ways that you can leverage those.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because by holding back and releasing it all at once, you're not just going to be an ongoing bit of noise that's going on in the background. That's the thing, isn't it? You're trying to hold all that noise for that moment. And that's exactly what worked with your book and clearly what worked in this case here. So, but the other problem as well is keeping everyone from not saying anything until the right moment, particularly on something like social media, where if they say it 1 hour before someone else, you're going to reduce, well, frankly, minutes before, you're going to reduce the effect.
Yes,
I think about with journalists, you know, the classic embargoed press release from the old days. And there's no law forcing people to keep with that. And then if someone gets the story out before someone else, then that other person is going to be very angry about it. They're going to say, well, why did you release that story? You're going to have to explain that. Getting people to coordinate at that exact moment is actually quite a challenge, I think.
I'm sure it was. I imagine that was the entire effort of the campaign, was coordinating the exact timing of that. I'd be very curious to know how they did it, in fact, especially if you're working across time zones or people who have different schedules. Your influencer is supposed to click their message at this exact moment. What happens if the doorbell rings or the baby cries? There's just so many factors that can't be managed against. So kudos to them for pulling it off.
What sort of experiences have you had then with influencers in this way? I mean, have you kind of combined people, or have you focused more on individual niche influencers on a particular topic, particularly within the tech space?
Yes, we've worked across. It's becoming a more and more something that my clients are asking for, that they want influencer engagement. We generally tried to get a handful of people who are the right fit, and they tend to cost a bit more, so you can only go with a certain number. And then we try to help them create the message, and we give them some coordinates around the timing and make sure that everything's going to go the way we'd like it to go. But ultimately, it's their channel and their decision, so you can't control it entirely. But it is becoming more and more effective to have an underpinning of the right noise in the right places that goes along with the campaign. It's just another great way to get people aware.
You mentioned also about the nano influencers too, and there does seem to be a lot more conversation going on now in the PR world about using nano influencers, and also they can be sometimes cheaper as well. I mean, what's been your experience with that?
They can be really wonderful, particularly if you find people who genuinely want to be an advocate for the product you're working on. We have a client now. They have it's a health tech device that helps people with the skin conditions, and it's entirely done through light. It's a device that pulses light on your skin and helps to cure this eczema or those types of things. And we got some wonderful influencers who struggle with some of these skin conditions. We gave them a free device, and they, of their own accord, tracked their progress with it and showed how the device worked. And they became so enamored with this device and how it had helped them that they decided themselves that they were going to do more than we had asked them to do and demonstrate more of the product. So if you give people a product they can believe in, sometimes you get even more than you bargained for out of it.
And that's a great story as well, because if they're tracking it over time, that means update after update after update, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly, which was great. And they were so genuine, and they were willing to be vulnerable with showing the skin condition that they struggle with and talking about the issues they had. So it was really lovely to partner with people who were willing to be such great evangelists of the brand and bring so much of themselves to it.
Brilliant. You are listening to the Public Relations Podcast with me, Richard Midson, and Amanda Prosio from Lightspeed PR this week. And by the way, if you want the newsletter that goes out with the show, it is completely free weekly and includes some of my key takeaways from each episode as well. You can get that at the publicrelationspodcast.com. And also, if you're looking for more ideas like this, and check out PRology.com as well, which is coming along soon as well. I'll be compiling even more of my thoughts. So this is a section of the show where we round up comments and questions and survey results, but also it's an opportunity to discuss some of the ideas that you've got and some of the questions you have as well in the community bag. So let's have a look at what we've got here. The first question we have this week is, how can a small business effectively manage its public relations on a limited budget? It's a pretty wide-ranging question, this one. I'll let you go for it first, Amanda, and then I'll give my thought on this one. What would you say?
Honestly, there's a lot of ways you can do PR even with a small budget. There are small boutique agencies out there. There are very specifically targeted agencies. For example, my agency, we just do tech. If you're in a particular niche and you know what your goals are, it's easy to find a public relations agency or even an individual practitioner. There are wonderful freelancers out there, people who just do this because they love it, and they're willing to work with you for a certain number of hours or a certain budget to help you achieve your goals, even if if you don't have a lot to spend.
My thought on this is just like what Amanda said there is, it's about focusing on who you're actually trying to reach. I think still you hear too much about this spray and pray approach to PR of just trying to write a press release and send it to hundreds of people, and it just doesn't work anymore. And you can spend a lot of time trying to pester the wrong people. So it really is, to me, it's about going, who are the core people I need to reach? One or two core people, and focusing on that. Or as Amanda was saying, there's getting the right agency on board that can connect that up so that you're not wasting your time or spending money on something that is just not going to achieve the results. So focused would be my take on it too. Let's have a look at the next question. What are the most significant changes in public relations strategy with the rise of social media and digital platforms? My thought on this is that I think PR has changed so much. You know, the old idea that PR is just press is just, it's over. It's still a factor, but it's ultimately, to me, PR today is about generating a conversation however you do it. It doesn't matter whether you're using social media. It doesn't matter whether you're using press. I mean, even, you know, I was talking to an agency the other day, one of these integrated agencies now, where they're saying that earned media is just as important now. It's about how can you create that conversation overall. So I think it's not so much a question of saying, well, which should you focus on, or should we be worried about the rise of social media? It's about saying, what is the best method you can use today to achieve that result? That's my takeaway. What's yours, Amanda?
Yes, I completely agree that an integrated effort will go so much further. And it doesn't have to be complicated or expensive. Just even if you have one person who can post your news media on your social channels or engage with the people who are following you or put content up that's interesting to your target audiences, it's not hard, but there's ways it can go hand in hand. Like we were talking about influencers or something. We've even used our social media team to target media for us sometimes if we're not getting results or responses. Yeah. You know, we can connect with them in their social channels. And there's so many ways in which they overlap that they really are stronger together.
Yeah, I was chatting with a friend at the BBC the other day, and I said, how do you get stories these days? What's the main way you get them? And she said, Twitter. Yeah. It's not press releases. It's simply by looking at what people are talking about and what's trending. Well, going back to the whole trendings discussion again, those are the stories that she picks up on. Yeah. Amanda, thanks so much. I've got to ask you, you said about in your book about you were answering questions, which people have been asking. What's kind of the ones that most stood out? Not the common ones, not like the sort of general, how do I get PR? But what are the ones that you thought were the most quirky or really interesting?
I can't tell you how often I hear this one. And I think it's probably goes to the essence of what it is we do and why it's so misunderstood. People say, hang on a second. Are you telling me you get news? Because they don't understand that earned media means that we influence what's printed in the newspaper or shown on television. They say news is news. They just report on what's happening.
So they don't understand the process behind it.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't realize that there are people standing in the wings, pitching the media, sending out press releases or giving them first looks at products or interviews with leaders. They think that the reporters are just out there doing all of that themselves.
They haven't got time.
Yeah, exactly. I was speaking with a PR person recently, someone, a freelancer for my team, and she told me her mother said to her, well, the Tonight Show, that's just friends of Jimmy Fallon who just stop by to say hello and sit down in the chair, right? Oh, if only.
That's the perception that's being put across, yes.
Yes. So, and I think it's partly because we're doing our job well. Our job is to be in the shadows and to have subtle movements in the background and not let anyone see that we're doing so much influencing. But it's worked too well. No one knows what we're doing. They don't get it. So I have to answer that question a shocking amount of time.
I'd never thought about that from that perception of like Jimmy Fallon. They're all just friends of it. You know, it's a bit like Joe Rogan. I mean, how many interviews does he go through? There's no way he can be preparing for all those himself and knowing all these people. It's just impossible.
Yeah, but that's the impression. That's just he must.
So what's next for PR, do you think? You've seen 30 years of this. I've seen a few years of my time as a journalist and in PR as well. What do you think is going to be where it all goes next? I mean, one of the things that I've been discussing with people recently is that with the way that AI is going to be able to generate a simple announcement or simple marketing or do automatically doing Google AdWords and things like this, the traditional marketing is facing quite a threat from AI. But PR, the emotional side, the understanding of nuance about communication between people, could almost have a bit of a golden age of renaissance. I don't know. What do you make of it? What do you think the future of PR is?
Right. I think that's the piece that is undervalued on the PR side. I think marketers are too often the dominant voice at the table, and they don't recognize how much the PR people are bringing in terms of what we understand about the public and sentiment and attitudes and all the ways in which that can really lend to a strategy or response to a crisis or whatever, because it is that human experience of knowing what people are going to respond to or why they're responding in the way that they are. I hope that conversations like these, all the things that I'm saying in relation to my book and what you're saying, it makes people recognize that the PR team has an awful lot to bring to the marketing conversation, even the advertising conversation. And when we share our voices together and we come up with the most human way to go about it, that can probably be the most successful.
Do you think PR has got a PR problem, that people think that PR is just purely old-fashioned traditional press and send of press releases?
I do, yes. In fact, I wrote an article for PR News that was exactly that title.
There you go, yeah.
I do. I think it's we're undervalued and misunderstood. Mm. I shared my book with a dear friend who's the head of communications for a major company, and she told me she still has to explain on a daily basis to the marketing team what it is her team does, because they still don't really understand all that we're affecting from our little sphere.
That's a really good point. Okay, so let's hypothesize on the spot. If we're looking at it then, the PR has got to improve its PR message. I mean, it would take more than a few seconds of us doing this on the spot right now, but what have we got to do? How can we get people to understand PR better? I mean, is it the fact that the voice is too quiet compared to the general marketing world? I mean, how do we get the word out there?
It's not easy. I've started with a grassroots effort of just educating everyone who comes across me to tell them what I do, how we do it. You know, so many people just think we throw parties all day long. Yes. Or my own family thinks I do advertising, despite the fact that I've corrected them 1,000 times. Yeah. You know, you work for this company. I saw their ad. Yes, I had nothing to do with that. So it's the education, as you come across every opportunity, to let people in on the secret, because I think there's real harm that's happening as a result, which businesses who call me up and say, my investors are telling me I need PR, but I don't know what it is, so I don't really care, and I don't know why I'm talking to you. And I say to them, well, imagine that there's another tool you can use to improve your business or to get better awareness or to accomplish your goals. And that's when they finally say, oh, well, maybe I should learn what PR is. But it troubles me, all the people who aren't calling me and ask that question, because they don't understand and they're not recognizing the value.
So is the need for PR people to stop going to PR conferences and start going to general marketing conferences and talking and explaining it more? I mean, there were two conferences earlier this year that I was going along to, and one of them was a PR conference and the other one was marketing. And it just felt that really now it's got to combine it more.
Yes.
You can't just have the PR people, not necessarily in the other room, but they're that lot over there. It's all got to be seen as more integrated now, isn't it?
I think so, absolutely. And more, we're getting calls from clients who want one program. They say, you know, partner with a marketing agency or an advertising agency. Give us one team. We don't want to coordinate all these things.
Yeah.
So more and more, I think those barriers are going to have to come down just so that we all have the opportunities that we want. But yes, absolutely. We should be going to marketing conferences and advertising conferences. We should be understanding better what we all do so that we can... I really believe all of our disciplines are more valuable than the sum of our parts when they're done correctly together.
Yeah, it's time for PR to really do a PR campaign on itself, isn't it? Amanda, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. Any final thoughts on what you think is coming up for PR or things that are on your mind of what you're doing next?
I'm excited to see what 2024 brings. It's a big election year in the States, and that always generates a lot of news. Things like what's happening with AI and all of these new different forms of advertising and digital advertising and social media and how those are all impacting us. I think it's going to be very exciting.
It's certainly going to be an interesting year with politics with AI. It's going to be, we did an episode recently where we were talking about the positives and the negatives. The ability to target more specifically is certainly exciting, but then equally the fake news factor is going to be interesting to see just how bad that gets, isn't it?
It is. That's one thing that concerns me about TikTok. And we'll see if they address that. But yes, these are all big questions and new questions that will have to be answered soon.
And just a reminder for people, tell us about your book again and also where people can get hold of you.
Sure, absolutely. It's called PR Confidential. It's Unlocking the Secrets, Creating a Powerful Public Image. It's a bit of a tell-all.
Yeah, if you're not watching on YouTube, which I know most people are listening in, so we better describe the front cover. So it's got a massive letter PR on the front.
Yes, big PR on the front with a banner going across it of Confidential, and there's a bit of a spotlight image in blue and white. That was the goal anyway. It's a short read, only 9 pages, but there's a little glossary in the back if you want to learn more. You can get it on Amazon, or if you want to go to my website, lightspeedpr.com, you can get a free download from our homepage.
Wonderful. Amanda, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun.
Awesome. So just a couple of things to round up the show before we draw everything to a close. If you are running a campaign, let me know what you are up to. If you'd like to come on the show as a guest as well, just go to the website at thepublicrelationspodcast.com and you will see a link for the word guest there. It's got all the details about how you can take part in the show and the kind of things that we cover in it. If you haven't been hearing too many of this new format that we've been running in series 6. So as I say, if you'd like to come on the show, head to thepublicrelationspodcast.com. Finally, also just a reminder, of course, PRology is where I'm going to be putting a bunch of my own thoughts in future too. There's a waiting list on there at the moment, but I'll be expanding that over the coming months as well. So whatever you are up to, whatever part of PR you're doing, whatever niche you're in, whether you're in the world of politics or tech or entertainment or whatever it is, I hope you are having an amazing week. I hope you found a few ideas in here today that helped inspire your own campaigns. Let me know what you're getting up to. You can always reach out to me as well on LinkedIn. That's the best way of getting hold of me. Just search for Richard Midson. That's MIDSON, Richard Midson, MIDSON. Let me know what you're up to. Come on the show, and I hope you have an absolutely wonderful week. I will speak to you very soon.